This is Cave Scott Allen of OTCO.com.
This is Kevin Dente.
This is John Galloway.
This is Scott Kuhn from LazyCoder.com.
Welcome to this episode of Herding Code, being recorded on April 21st. Tonight's guests include Matt Podwysocki, who regularly blows off this podcast, Go Have Dinner with Eric Meyer. We also have Chris Williams. Chris, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm Chris Williams, curator of JSConf, the first conference specifically devoted to JavaScript as a programming language, both in the client side and server side. I work at a company called OurParents.com that I'm the co-founder of. We help adult children with their aging parents and just pretty much do all sorts of crazy stuff in the local DC tech community. My Twitter handle is Voodoo Tiki God, and that's probably how most people are going to know me.
And it says on one web page here that you're a devoted beer geek.
Huge craft beer geek. Tonight I'm sipping on the nice Bell's Amber Ale. It was a fight between that and the Oberon since it is spring season. But yeah, huge craft beer geek.
There we go. That's our topic for the night. We also have, I don't know if I'll pronounce this right, Ray Bango.
Yeah, you got it right.
Excellent. Can you introduce yourself, sir?
Sure. This is Ray Bango, and I am Microsoft's new community PM for the JavaScript community. And so I'm going to be working really closely with the with JavaScript developers and trying to help Microsoft build a really strong direction to make sure their needs are met. And in addition, I'm also the head of evangelism for the jQuery project, which I think most people know me from. I'm very passionate about the jQuery project and the community. And lastly, I'm a writer for Ajaxian.com.
Excellent. That's a great site. I've followed that for a long time.
Yeah, it's been around for a while, and it is an outstanding site.
So tonight's topic is all about JSConf and the JavaScript community. So Chris, tell us about JSConf. How did you get the idea to start it?
It's a great question. JSConf was actually started, as many things in my life are, over a good pint of beer. Actually, it was over about good 6 pints of beer. I was hanging out with one of my buddies who actually does all the AV for JSConf, named Ken Henderson. Him and I were out drinking, and we were like, I want to go to a conference about JavaScript. You know, you got jQuery, you got Dojo, you got MooTools. I don't want to go to one of them. I want to go to all of them. And looked around, didn't find anything was specifically devoted to JavaScript. My work right near SiteWorks, which was doing some server-side JS, and I knew that Joint was getting into the server-side JS with the Reasonably Smart platform. So I was looking for something that really fit that mold of JavaScript as a pure, awesome language that it truly is, and didn't find anything at all. So I figured, in a slightly intoxicated state, let's go with this. And my wife and I were the only two who drove it. So we, given that she would stick by me through thick and thin, she and I curated the first JSConf last year, which was sort of the inaugural event in the JavaScript community, bringing everyone together, getting them all into a room, and then really trying to build a focused community around this programming language that most people hate before then. So from there, we got the venue, we lined up a couple speakers, we had all sorts of people lined up in a wide range. We kind of did 2 of mobile, 2 of database, 2 of client side, 2 of server side, and then we alternated that out through the schedule. And it ended up bringing together some of the smartest individuals in the technology community at large, and it was an awesome time. And that inspired JSConf EU, which took it and raised the bar a little bit more. And that led to JSConf 2010, which is this year's. And in order to sort of even be on par with what we've already done, both US last year and EU last year, we decided we'd wrap it around pirates because, heck, developers love pirates. It's part of the nature of the JavaScript programmer to be a little bit piratey, a little bit commandeering, a little bit scallywaggish in order to get it done. That sort of led us to the theme. And then this year, one of the nice things we had was a lot of our speakers. We had more speaker requests than we actually had seats at the conference. And we really go for an intimate style conference. So it's very small and very tight-knit. And then that really allowed us to drive and create this great conference that we were able to pull off. It was only awesome because of the people that showed up, and we had everyone ranging from a 50% audience participation in server-side JS, or Common JS as it's more appropriately named now, and a 50% audience participation from general libraries, MooTools, Dojo, Prototype, that other one that Ray works on, jQuery. And then you put them all in a room, you hyper-caffeinate them, and then you hyper-intoxicate them, and beautiful things happen.
Yeah, and Chris, I wanted to add to that as well. I mean, you know, really, I think the big thing for this event was the level of intimate contact that was available. I mean, you were able to rub elbows with a who's who in the JavaScript community. And the cool thing about it is that it seemed like everybody was really accessible. You're talking about guys who really, when you're learning JavaScript, you look up to, and you almost idolize them and put them on a pedestal. And then when you meet them in person, they're just the average guys, the guys who just you'd hang out with on a weekend and, you know, whatever. And they're really, really just approachable, and you can sit down and have a cup of coffee with them and just have a great conversation. It was a really, really cool experience.
To follow on with that, good point, Ray. That's actually the one thing that I love the most about this community, is that there are no superstars. There are no rock stars. Case in point, we actually had Brendan Eich out for the entire weekend. Brendan Eich, for those of you who don't know, is the father of JavaScript. He actually, during his time at Netscape, created LiveScript, which then was redubbed for marketing reasons to JavaScript. And he showed up. He was at the conference, and nobody even realized who he was. And he didn't go trying to make his name known or anything. He just sat and hung out with all of us until it was about a Saturday night where myself and Peter Higgins from the Dojo group were sitting on the bus, and he was just hanging out there and finally said, "We can't take it anymore. Do you guys know who this is? This is Brendan Eich. This is the guy who wrote the language that we're here for." And we had actually kept that secret. If you look on the website today, it still says /BE. We didn't tell anybody that he was going to be there. Unless you'd gotten an email from him, you wouldn't know that his signature is /BE. His title for his talk was An Introduction to JavaScript, which is all sorts of the piracy of hiding treasure and whatnot. So we did a lot of fun things like that.
So what were some of the highlights of the conference for you guys?
For me, it was actually just pulling it off. We had a lot of crazy events that honestly should not have been able to be pulled off. For those of you that weren't able to attend, we started the event on a Friday night that we had a new event that we added to the rotation called ScurvyConf. And what this was is we left one slot open in our track A, and we let the audience pick who was going to fill that slot. So hanging out at a beer bar, everyone got up and presented on a 5-minute basis using whatever slides they could to rally the audience and get them to really dig their presentation. And whoever won got the slot in track A. And it was pretty epic. So the followed on from that, we started at 9 a.m. We had an excellent food selection that was basically chef prepared, focused around the whole pirate theme. There was jerk steak and tilapia and samagundi, which is a very pirate special salad that's got like salted meats and awesomeness. And the day drove through until the keynote at about 4:30, which was correspondence between myself and Aaron Quint, the author of Sammy.js, who lives up in Brook to the Lynn, as he calls it. And he put in the talk about Sammy.js, and we were out up drinking after an NYCJS meeting. And I was like, "What do you do that's really passionate? What do you do that's unique from everybody else?" And so we made a presentation about bacon, and bacon is all a beautiful, beautiful thing. And he actually was able to take the presentation, make it into something very special that you can actually find out on the internet. And if you get a second, you should definitely check it out. But he also related making bacon and the organic food movement back to software development and how we really need to get ourselves onto a sustainable model and not have big companies processing software developers at mass quantity and just really using them as if they were cattle or large pork farms. So it's kind of cool to have that energetic, driving, innovative talk right before getting on a boat after we were on a school bus that had a sort of hole in the middle of it and a lot of beer on it that got us there. And then once on the pirate ship, everyone drank and danced and had a wonderful dinner. And then after that, they were all back at the hotel and had a great time. The day started back up at 9 a.m. and drove all the way through. And the way JSConf, the drive through the day works, is it's a one-track conference with 5 tracks. It's got a track A that we pick the schedule for based off of what we see the community driving towards and the individuals that we feel like need to be represented there. try to pick individuals who've never spoken or individuals who've spoken but not on the topic that they've picked. And that's really one of the defining things. We're not just reprocessing content. We're trying to find the newest, most scariest, most probably could be a complete failure content out there. But if it's a success, it's going to be a huge success. Case in point, one of the ones on Saturday was a presentation by Tobias Schneider, who is a developer out of Germany. He's working on the flash problem, as a lot of the world is worried about and calls it. Flash is, a lot of people are trying to go the HTML5 route or CSS transitions. His view was, screw that. Instead of trying to fight Flash, embrace it. Find a way to process it and run it all the way down to low-level JavaScript. So he's able to take SWF files, re-render them, and process them in JavaScript and render the output to the screen. And that's just mind-blowing.
That's insane.
Yeah. It was one of the most impactful and standing ovation-worthy talks at JSConf this year. And then from there, we went to a wide variety of things, including a demonstration of Greenhouse and Sprout Core and their amazingly epic touch facilities that they have available on the iPad. If you haven't had a chance to see the post on Ajaxian, definitely recommend it. They're doing some amazing things in the mobile sphere and the multi-touch sphere. And then we went on to a security talk that made everyone pretty much close their computers and never touch the internet ever again thereafter. That was followed up by Brendan Eich presenting, and then followed up by Alex Russell, the founder of Dojo. And he also is now working at Google, and he works on Google Chrome Frame, which, no offense to the Microsoft listeners out there, but is a way to inject Google Chrome rendering engine into the IE system. So that way you can actually, as an external developer, say, I'd like this rendered in Google Chrome over Microsoft Internet Explorer. I know. A lot of people that listen to this podcast might hate me right now, or might hate him. I defray it all to him.
I think the easy way to sell it is to say IE6, and then pretty much you've got everyone on your side.
Okay. Well, that was a prevalent theme throughout, is that IE6 must die. It was coined from the very beginning by Douglas Crockford, and then stayed prevalent throughout the rest of the conference. And I think all good-hearted and caring human beings believe in that, that IE6 has to die a slow and painful death.
Yeah, no, and even from the Microsoft side, I think it's you had Scott Guthrie up at Mixum basically saying that Microsoft is looking for people to help push IE6 away, you know, and get people to upgrade. So I can certainly understand that. And the one thing that I did get, and as much as I'm a Microsoft employee, and so I'm kind of, you know, spinning the Microsoft side of things, the one thing I did see is that people seemed very, very happy with the direction of IE9. That was actually some good feedback. I think the announcements about IE9 and some of the standard support that they're incorporating in it made a lot of developers very happy. And I think also embracing some of the more open web technologies like JavaScript, CSS, and HTML, and making a concerted effort to play in that space was looked really positively by the crowd. That's the feedback that I got, and obviously I went in there, you know, trying to gauge what people's reactions were. So I think a lot of people would definitely want to see IE6 kind of go away. I'm definitely one of those people, because it's heartache left and right, and I think it's IE9 is going to take it to another level there. I think it's a really positive step.
So here's a question. I think when I'm talking to people, one thing that will surprise them is if you talk about using JavaScript outside of a browser. What are some of the things that are happening with JavaScript outside the browser?
That's actually a very exciting, very exciting sphere right now, and very chaotic sphere. As a base language is a functional programming language that has an object-oriented problem, as I like to refer to it. A lot of people try to apply standard 00 practices to JavaScript, but it's not really a 00 language per se. It can do it, but it's more of a prototypal language that can do functional programming rather beautifully. What you're seeing right now is two sort of branches that are doing server or thick client, desktop level JavaScript programming. One is called Norwal, and that's produced originally by a guy named Tom Robinson from 280 North, and then is driven by a larger community that includes Kevin Dangor and Chris Kowal and a wide variety of individuals that are just really, really doing a phenomenal job, and they're trying to standardize it, make a acceptable file I/O and network stack accessibility and everything that JavaScript in most people's minds is pretty much impossible. There's another upstart that actually came on the stage at JSConf EU last year in, I want to say, October timeframe, October, November timeframe, whenever JSConf EU happened, called Ryan Dull. And he is, without a doubt, probably, well, we don't know the numbers for this year, JSConf US 2010, but he's without a doubt the most viewed individual in the JSConf video archive. His presentation received a standing ovation. And what it really was a fundamental argument for a shift in general programming. Most people view the way to program things and to program them fast is to spawn as many threads as possible and spawn fibers, and if you're in the Ruby world, and spawn threads in pretty much anything and processes and stuff of that nature. But his view was is to take what we know about JavaScript in a browser, which is you have an event loop that throws, you know, that you register an event handler in, and then eventually that event handler gets the action. The data passes in based off of a standard API, and then that callback is executed and does what it does after that. So his framework called Node.js really drives around that theme of doing functional callbacks that you register within this event loop. And then the event loop, which is very tight and very light and written in V8, really drives it forward and makes it awesome. That's the fundamental of his system. And he really does a lot of stuff. It's not really been stabilized yet, but he's definitely working towards stabilization. There's been all sorts of changes that go on. It's been driving some amazing projects. One of the things that he unveiled at US 2010 was that it is as fast as Nginx is at this point. And that's something pretty powerful to say that JavaScript can be as fast as a well-known and well-used web server that's already deployed in the world. Myself personally, I use a variety of different technologies. I actually use Node to download, parse CSV files, load them up into JSON objects that are then persisted back into a CouchDB system. We ported that from a Ruby script that took about 3 hours, and it now runs in about 15 minutes. Just because it throws it into the event loop, and then instead of doing threading and taking all that memory and time and processor, it just uses the event loop to handle it very efficiently.
So server-side JavaScript engines have been around for a while. There's Jaxer, there's Helma. There was some kind of chocolate cocoa something-based one. I can't remember what it was. It was kind of like Helma. And Mod.js and some other things. So what's besides the evented IO stuff, why is server-side JavaScript really taking off? Is it just Node.js, or are people starting to realize that, I mean, besides the fact that it's not a toy language, but that you can actually do some really cool stuff with the language itself beyond just, you know, animating mouseovers and things like that?
Well, there's been a fundamental shift in the way that JavaScript's been viewed, not just from the developer perspective, but also from the financial investment perspective. And I'm not necessarily talking about like VC funding. The Helma system and even SitePen's Persevere, and SiteWorks had one that was based off of Rhino, but I forget its name right now. They presented last year at US 2009. But they were all based in this time where JavaScript was sort of relegated entirely to the server, and you only had two people fighting for that sphere. And then eventually that decayed down to one person fighting for it, being Microsoft IE, and then it just went stagnant for a long period of time. What ended up happening is right now, right at this very moment, you probably have more funding dumped into JavaScript and the performance and tuning and improvement of the JavaScript language and the JavaScript interpreter engines than any other language out there. So it went from being one of the slowest on the interpreter scale benchmarks to being one of the fastest in under 2 year time frame. So, you know, huge leaps forward, like including just-in-time tracing algorithms and, low-level optimizations and long-term or long-tail algorithmic analysis on code bits really make JavaScript take it from being a toy language to being one of the fastest interpreted languages out there. I think LuaJIT is the only one that's actually faster than it in current benchmarks. So that's sort of why you're seeing the resurgence in things like Helm or Node and Norwal. Norwal is actually now ported and actually runs on top of Node. The fact that you have a V8 and you have a JavaScript core or Squirrelfish Extreme or Nitro, whatever you want to call Apple's JavaScript engine. And they're funding the development of it, not just for, you know, not just for them, for like a desktop browser, but they have actually put money in it to make it a fundamentally capable system for their deployed systems on their mobile, be it iPhone or iPad, development processing. All the help docs for those two systems all are HTML driven. Because of that, they're able to, you know, they need to have that be, can I say poop fast, shit hot. And in order for that to, you know, be that way, they are dropping some serious money and serious investment into it. You have Mozilla, who's always been investing in it. I mean, Brendan Eich, CTO of Mozilla, is one of the founders, so he has a firm belief in it at some level. And you know, you have Google, you have Opera with the Kraken, and then you have Microsoft, who a little bit late to the speed up game, but is definitely seeing a resurgence, especially as shown in IE9. And because of all this, you have this tremendous force moving forward, and it's now being taken more seriously than it ever has.
Is Matt still there? Did he leave for dinner again?
No. I'm still here.
You were
Matt. Why don't you chat about some of the things? Because there was a presentation that might be very applicable to the audience. We actually had a delegation of, is it three or four Microsoft employees at JSConf?
Yeah. So we had Ray, myself, and Jeffrey Van Gogh. So Jeffrey joined us. He's from, of course, Eric Meyer's team, and he and I had
Harry Pearson was there too, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was about to say Harry Pearson was there.
Yeah, he was there too, but he wasn't there to present. He was just there to kind of sit there and listen. I think he was just there for a CAPS game and incidentally a JavaScript conference. But anyways, Jeffrey and I had been working on a lot of the porting of the reactive extensions for JavaScript, so we thought it was a kind of a good idea to not only present what we've done, but also kind of elicit feedback for what everyone is doing, and especially around event call and callback composition. So I thought it was extremely valuable for us to be there, not only from a framework perspective, but just as well from a show that people from Microsoft actually get JavaScript and want to be there and want to engage the community. So that's kind of why we wanted to be there. I personally learned quite a lot there, just from going to the presentations, but not only that, but right afterwards, it's just to go to one of the speakers and say, open up the laptop and let's just start coding. And I was able to do that with the YUI guys and just go through some code, talk about some ideas, and incorporate them back into the product. That was really, really key for me. I mean, there are a lot of conferences out there that you'll find that you get the most bang for your buck, not in the sessions, but in the hallways. And that's certainly true for this one. But the quality of the sessions were as such that you really, really wanted to be in them. And you wanted to challenge your way of thinking and engage in the conversation about them.
Following on to that, I forgot to mention the other four. I mentioned the one track A. The other four tracks in JSConf, the second one is track B, and what we do is we give 30-minute time blocks to everyone, to the general audience. They schedule first come, first serve. And it's a nice way to really appreciate the fact that, especially in JavaScript and any language for that matter of fact, the speaker selection for a conference happens 6 months before the conference actually happens. So 6 months is a long time in the technology field. I don't even think reactive was a twinkle in anyone's eye outside of a small group within Microsoft.
Yeah, it hadn't even been released yet. Yeah.
Right. So if we had just locked it to one track, it wouldn't have had any stage light. And luckily, because we have track B, they were able to get in and speak and really present some amazing stuff. It was killer. Track B actually ended up being as strong as track A, if not stronger, this year because of the explosion. We had a presentation about CoffeeScript, which is a beautiful way of putting a DSL around JavaScript and making it widely accessible for people who write Python or Ruby, and then they can just port that knowledge almost directly over and not have to worry about the bad parts of JavaScript.
Yeah, I really did like the CoffeeScript piece because, to me, a geek who spent a lot of time in Erlang, it's just like, wow, I get pattern matching and I get all these sorts of things that, at the end of the day, I don't really care how it renders to JavaScript, although it's quite readable. I just get a lot more bang for my buck in my investment in JavaScript, and I thought that was really, really cool.
Yeah, if you have, for some reason, a disagreement or beef with JavaScript, which you should definitely overcome, I would definitely check out the CoffeeScript website. Just type in CoffeeScript to Bing or Google.
Is it okay if I ask Jeeves about it? That's usually...
You can ask Jeeves.
Okay.
Do not ask the dog pile. It turns up very awkward. But it's a little language that compiles down into JavaScript. It's got some beauty that you know, if you wrote the code yourself, you probably couldn't generate as beautiful code as what this does, except for in a couple cases. It brings things like splats to the language, as Matt alluded to, the extensions and the pattern matching and then list comprehensions and all sorts of beautiful features to language, just using the language itself to generate the language itself. So it's a really cool little thing. And what I love about their site is they show you the way that they do their source is they show you what it looks like in CoffeeScript and then right next to it what the JavaScript that is generated actually looks like. And it's really, really neat, especially for if you wanted to learn raw JavaScript and how you would actually write raw JavaScript. It's awesome how you can just look right there and see it. So.
Yeah, and there was another session as well about kind of the underlying guts behind how it was done. So all of the JavaScript native JavaScript parsers that people have written, including JSON, which was very interesting as well, just how they pulled it off, just down to the very guts of it. That was really, really cool too.
I was kind of surprised that the 280 North guys didn't have a presentation or anything to announce for the conference.
They did. They had a Trek A slot. I'm good friends with the 280 North guys, and they're a hoot. All three of them are great guys, and they all do really killer stuff. Francisco has been working on a documentation tool to try to uniform and unify documentation, not just in JavaScript, but for all languages, using something that's very portable and very comprehensive, called Socratic. And it's getting down to a base boilerplate of what documentation should be and how to make it so that way developers want to do it as opposed to feel like it's a ton of bricks sitting on their shoulders. And it was a really cool technology. When we get the video out, I definitely recommend checking it out. They also brought up Ross and Tom. I didn't mention Tom earlier. Ross and Tom, the other two guys out of 280 North, and they showed off some of the new things that they have coming out with Cappuccino and Objective-J, and really showed off some really killer technologies.
So there's several different kind of competing or complementary client libraries. You know, there's of course jQuery, there's ext.js, there's MooTools, there's Prototype, etc. And
dojo,
excuse me, sorry. And so yes, so in the you mentioned earlier, you know, that Narwhal was running on top of Node.js, and I wonder if there's some kind of convergence like that could happen on the client, if that would be a good thing or not. I mean, I know from it seems like there's a lot of duplication and competing platforms, and in some ways that's very good because they spur each other on, and in other ways it's kind of like, you know, people, I've heard developers say, why can't we just get jQuery part of the, you know, like part of the
browser,
just natively supported, exactly. And so it's like, well, what would that mean, and is there a way that could be complementary?
And I think there's definitely a possibility to look at certain aspects of libraries and try to figure out what are the modular components and what can be consolidated. You look at and John Rezik kind of tried to do that with the selector engine, which was one of the most logical areas to do, and that's he created Sizzle. And shortly after that, then there was a lot of other selector engines that came out. Like, for example, you have NW Matcher, and you have Alex Russell created Acme. And so getting consensus between library developers is it's a bit of a challenge because every project has their own philosophy. I think the cool thing about server-side JavaScript is that it feels like we're almost starting from a clean slate, and we're still in that early stage, while a lot of these other libraries, like, you know, jQuery, MooTools, Dojo, YUI, etc., they've matured already to a certain point, and trying to make large-scale architectural changes is not as easy at this point. Is that, what do you think, Chris? You think that's something that's pretty much on target?
I would actually ask why. I would retort back to the question of why.
Sure.
Reason why I know that's kind of cavalier and whatnot and throwing it back, but you know, the browser wars were lost not because of too much competition or too much diversity, but because of lack of it. I think that each of these libraries, you know, they strive to be better because of the fact that there isn't a common platform that they use. They actually, you know, one performs better in certain circumstances, one performs better in others. I actually can't think of one uniform thing that all the libraries actually either do well or do uniformly in a standard manner. I mean, Pete Higgins, an awesome guy who wears very ridiculous hats, he made an effort to make Dojo more accessible to jQuery folk with his PlugD compatibility. And, you know, is it the right thing? That would be one of the questions I would ask. I think if you want a base platform, the base platform is JavaScript. And I think one of the things we lack as a community, and I mentioned this in my presentation that I gave way too early on a Saturday morning, was that, you know, we sort of, as a community, we're getting away from learning the raw language. And a lot of people come in and they identify as I'm a jQuery developer or I'm a Dojo developer. And we shouldn't be that. We should be JavaScript developers who have the capability to use Dojo or jQuery and have the foresight to know when to use one versus the other.
Right. And I understand. And I understand that even kind of asking the question shows a little bit of disrespect towards the different libraries, and I don't mean that at all. I think that one of the things you mentioned there is, like, they all do different things better and worse, and so then it seems like it forces you to make some choices. So you say, okay, I want this broad platform that's easy to find stuff for. Okay, jQuery, and it, you know, has this basic selector engine. Or I want ext.js because I want to do all this, you know, I want to do grids and binding and all this. And so you end up kind of having to make choices. I think I definitely see where you're coming from, though, with the diversity is a great thing, and it kind of drives everyone forward. So that's...
I get the question.
Just respecting the libraries, because they will drop a cap on you, John.
I don't think you were disrespecting libraries. It's actually a common question that gets asked of, and it was actually brought up quite a few times in both the actual session and in periphery discussions in the Hacker Lounge. And I might be the crazy one, but I think, first off, I don't think consensus will ever be had, and I don't think it's a good thing. I think, taking Ray's point, and I don't know if he actually intended to make it, but, you know, John Resig created a selector engine, and in order to one-up him, somebody else created a new one. And then you run into ego conflicts, and it doesn't really help anything, whereas if we had just left one selector engine for jQuery, and, you know, if you want to use it, fine, it's open source code.
I didn't want to go that route, so
but you know I applaud John definitely for putting it out there. He takes I feel sorry for the guy. He takes a lot of flack for a lot of things that he's just trying to be a good intentioned individual. He's a great guy. And he does not mean ill will to anybody, and he's just trying to do what's best for the community at large, and it always goes not how he planned. Well, except for jQuery, which I think went awesomely and as he had planned. So I don't know. From a personal perspective, I'd rather see each library focus on being the best damn library possible, and then at that point, you know, the community will either decide what's most palatable or what's the best, and then you'll have convergence in that way through competition.
Well, at first the selector engine was embedded in jQuery, and you know, you couldn't really get to it because it was in the library, and then he kind of pulled it out and made it modular. But in the meantime, Prototype and the other ones had to write their own because they couldn't get to the jQuery one. And now I think Prototype 1.7, you can repackage it using Sizzle. I think 2.0 is going to make it pluggable as well. I think it's going to use Sizzle by default. So yeah, it kind of reached this consensus once it got released as its own separate package, it was a little bit easier to incorporate it in other libraries. Otherwise, you're just, you know, just slinging around arrays of elements.
Yeah, but just to clarify, I mean, John actually did reach out to all the major libraries and tried to build some level of consensus on this and tried to see if they'd be interested in packaging Sizzle once it was more of a modular type of thing. And he received mixed reaction. I mean, some people were very supportive, and I think, for example, the prototype team has been extremely supportive of his efforts, and they understand it, and those guys are great to work with. And then you have other teams that, didn't seem as convinced. And so, like Chris says, I don't think there'll ever be consensus on the way certain things need to be implemented, and that's a tough part, because something like a selector engine, that's where every library could really benefit from having the combined minds of these top JavaScript developers. That was a very logical area to tackle, and it hasn't really progressed as strongly as I think John would have hoped, and that's too bad.
But you got to remember that
we're also we're going to be leaning on the native browser selector engine eventually anyway.
Eventually
it's just going to be a wrapper.
Yeah, well we hope, but you look at query select all and it's still buggy, and so we hope that eventually that works. I know John is working with the W3C on a common DOM selector API that he's proposing. I mean, that might be actually a nice thing, but I don't know. We'll solely be dependent on the browser's native selector APIs. I mean, we had assumed that for many years, and it's still not the case to this day. So let's see.
Well, and you can't even count on get element by ID across
exactly.
All browsers to get the same.
Well, and you let's look at this in a bigger one. I mean, the standards committee itself has not been capable of coming to a consensus, and those are people who are charged with coming to a consensus. So how would competing libraries who are looking for market share, and therefore by market share funding, and therefore, you look at each of these libraries, although they are open source projects, they are essentially startup companies on their own right, and they live and die by the number of people using them. So what advantage do I get by consolidating down and then just becoming a plus one? I start losing my unique identity is generally the way that it's going to be perceived. And I get that. I think it might be better if the browsers ever come to consensus, which, there is an argument out there that it's against their good intention as a organization to actually do that. Case in point, certain forks of certain engines, like WebKit, in order to try to make it better by certain companies. And, how does that help the community? Now that I have a V8 versus a JavaScript core, how does that help the community at large? Why was there not a consensus at that point? Why not just say we're going to all work together on a core JavaScript engine and everyone benefits? And it's because, without seeming too cocky about the language, it's because it's a fundamentally important thing. The DOM rendering is DOM rendering. That can be everybody. Nobody cares about that. It has to be done. There's a compliance test. It has to be done. There is no real compliance test. There are attempts at that, but uniformity in JavaScript is a hard thing, and whoever gets that leverage point wins, especially right now.
Right, but I guess the thought I have, and I think this is the thought of many people, is that something like selector engines can be, there could be a consensus on this. This was an area that it could, and the distinguishing factors for some other libraries could be anything from object orientation to UI components to sandbox natives. You look at EXTJS, and what is EXTJS's claim to fame? It's rich UI suite. What is Dojo's claim to fame? It's broad support for enterprise level JavaScript RI development capabilities. So there are very, very unique ways that individual JavaScript libraries can distinguish themselves. And I think that if we could identify certain modules which could be highly optimized, by using everybody on these various teams, I think it would be a tremendous benefit for the community. It doesn't mean that every part of the library needs to be a consensus on it. But something like selectors would be a good starting point. And I think it builds a certain level of trust and relationship between the libraries. And to be honest, having been involved with the jQuery project, there has been a certain, you could tell there's been a certain level of kind of wariness between the projects working together. And I'd love to see maybe a little bit more bridging of that gap.
I think, I think the big thing is having open dialogues, and that's sort of the fundamental reason why we have the Hacker Lounge at JSConf. Talking at people is never as good as talking with people. I'm sure you caught it because, Ray, I think you spent the most amount of time out in the Hacker Lounge talking with people, but you'd catch moments where you'd see Peter Higgins and John Resig playing Modern Warfare together, and they probably, without having a place like JSConf to meet up, they never would do that. And I think when you start breaking down the barriers of me versus you and you make it just, me and you, it really makes that something. I think convergence doesn't happen until conversation does. And I think that's the most important thing. It was strange. A lot of people had never met John David Dalton until JSConf. And they, some people thought he was shorter. Some people thought he was taller. It was kind of weird. But I think part of the thing that makes us great, the internet, is also part of the thing that makes it hard, is we don't have a chance to sit down and just say, hey, my name is, and I like craft beer. Oh, I do too. And really connect on a different level than just what our badge of client library says. And, maybe if they had... they'd sat there and said, hey, I got this crazy idea called Sizzle over a pint, as opposed to it's a project that I'm extracting out from a project that I'm working on. It could have had a different effect. And that was one of the hopes that I had in setting up JSConf, is that maybe we can, either for selector engines or for, the way that DOM tree analysis is done, all sorts of stuff, event handlers and stuff of that nature, modules in the common JS sphere, until you sit down and have an actual human-to-human conversation, you're not actually having a chat. You're having a dialogue through digits, and it's not the same.
Right, and that's why I think that when we're talking about server-side JavaScript, I think we have more of an opportunity. JSConf really has opened that up for us. I definitely view that this event as one of the biggest, I guess call it bridge makers around. I mean, it's opened up a tremendous amount of doors and communication vehicles. So yeah, I agree with you, Chris. I think the internet doesn't allow you to really express your feelings or your passion about something. And it's hard to convey your ideas this way. And so I'm glad JSConf is around, and I'm glad you're, for example, that I'm able to sit down with you or with Pete Higgins or even Alex Russell. I had a great conversation with Alex Russell about Google Frame, and it totally gave me a different perspective on what Google Frame was about. So, it's just interesting. It's just interesting how meeting somebody face-to-face can totally change your perception of that person and the ideas that that person is trying to express.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm a firm believer of drinking beer and shooting the poop, and when you do that, magic happens. Maybe not so much on the poop side, but when you start chatting with each other, you start making things that you both want to make. And, like I said, I would love to figure out what would have happened if, John, Alex, Pete, Aaron, and John Dalton, and Sam Stevenson, if they'd all been sitting around having a beer, a couple shots of whiskey, if they had said, hey, let's create a awesome selector engine. And then that night all went home. Okay, realistically, the next morning, woke up and, started coding it. They probably could have created a selector engine that would have, all of them would have immediately adopted, because they would have had immediate adoption of it at the moment of creation. That's just an interesting, wicked way to do to really get back to the fundamentals of what development is it's just people with a similar drive and similar passion getting together and doing something cool with a laptop.
A lot of the cool things you talked about, say, for instance, Gordon, the Flash compiler for JavaScript, depend on browsers being able to support, like SVG or HTML5, that kind of thing. How many things are, what percentage of the things you're talking about are waiting on browser adoption? Like, they're cool things to talk about, but they're not going to work in majority, i.e. browser share, that kind of stuff.
That's a tough question. I think when you say majority browser share, what does that mean?
Well, sure. I mean, I look at the cool things you're talking about here. For instance, that Gordon Flash compiler thing. And
did you look at the targeted platforms? I think that might answer your question.
It does require SVG though, right?
Yes, or Canvas. I think more SVG. If you look at Gordon's website, it actually says targeted platforms. Gordon currently targets the following platforms: Mozilla Firefox greater than 3.0. Safari greater than or equal to 3.1, Chrome greater than or equal to 1.0, Opera greater than or equal to 10.5 beta. There are known compatibility issues with Microsoft Internet Explorer greater than or equal to 1.0. You know, there becomes a point when, as developers, we need to make decisions. So Gordon doesn't work on IE. Is that a concern? Most of IE at this point has Flash. So if you send an SWF file down, you view it in Flash.
Ah, good point. Okay.
And if you don't, like you're on an iPhone or an iPad, you use Gordon. You're done.
Okay.
Yeah. It was a good progressive enhancement story there. And there were several good sessions on that as well about how do you handle those sorts of platforms when you have, you know, the iPad and the iPhone that don't support Flash and that sort of thing.
I guess that's kind of the answer to all these things, huh? Is it's either progressive enhancement or shims like the VML engine for SVG or, you know, like that kind of stuff. So like you get... Or even like, you know, YouTube will do where it's if you support HTML5 video, you get it. Otherwise, we fall back to Flash and it all works.
Jen Lucas was the one who did the presentation about the progressive enhancement. And if you get a chance to check her slides, it's awesome. It's Star Wars Lego characters acting out various scenes in the background. And I love me some Star Wars and what geek doesn't. So you should definitely check it out. It's a great little presentation that really gets to the core, I think, of that question applied at a macro level. And for any of these micro instances, it's probably gonna be, you know, you have five browsers, take four, and then you got to really evaluate what happens in the next 10 years. Most people aren't developing. If you had been developing for Microsoft IE 4, I mean, you would have won the world. But if you've been developing for 3 and 3 alone, you'd be dead because 4 came out, I think, 6 months thereafter. 4 stayed around for a long time. Then 5 came around, I think, a year later. And then 6 has dominated the world for far too long. So, you know, it's a weird thing. I don't think Google and Apple at this point are going to let either browser stay around for far too long unless one of them wins. I'm not trying to degrade Microsoft. I really hope Microsoft gets it in gear and gets the truck rolling. If there's one player in this market who can beat both of them, it's probably going to be Microsoft. And I'm really hoping that they can get the truck into whatever gear it needs to be in order to be a forward motion and then move it, because they need to get up and this is the game platform. Let me put it this way. What was the only multi-million multinational company that wasn't represented at JSConf?
In terms of sponsorship?
Yeah.
That was us, Apple? Yes.
Apple had Charles Jolly up there.
Oh, IBM?
Yeah, but they didn't sponsor.
Apple didn't sponsor, yeah. So you have those two. But I would have expected Microsoft to have shown Boeing. Boeing doesn't generate a browser.
Cessna?
Okay. I should have scoped it to the web specific.
Dude, watch your closures.
I had a leaky memory. But I worked very hard to try to get Microsoft in, and there was some resistance. And you know, I really want to see Microsoft come back in, because most of the core innovation that you see on the internet right now has roots in Microsoft. There would be no Ajax experience. There would be no Ajaxian without Microsoft. And that's something that people forget to chat about, is that Microsoft brings a lot to the table. So I think it's fundamental to have them back firing on all possible engines and have them, you know, well represented in the community. That's why I did the best I could to get make sure that the reactive stuff, once I heard about it, was represented at JSConf. It's an important thing to have Microsoft there and kicking some tail.
So, and we are talking more to Matt and to Jeffrey next week about reactive extensions. So we're all big fans.
Yeah, I got a preview look at the RX for JS stuff, and I'm still trying to wrap my head around it. Really, it kind of changes the way that you look at callbacks and things like that, and the way that you kind of structure and your JavaScript. I talked to Matt when he was up here a few weeks ago about it, and he kind of helped me a little bit with talking about how you can program a little more linearly, and you don't have to nest as many callbacks. And that looked interesting, but I'm still trying to find ways, you know, where I can actually use it.
So aside, obviously, from reactive for JavaScript, I'm interested to know whether there were, for each of you, were there one or two sessions or topics or technologies that you saw at the conference that just completely knocked your socks off? You had mentioned Gordon previously, but were there other things that you were just blown away by?
I guess I'll start. Gordon, I didn't get, I'll admit, because I was the curator, I didn't get to see much of the talks, but I did get to see a lot of what was going on outside. And for me, the two most important things I saw, there was a big nerd fight that happened between Brendan Eich and Alex Russell. And you started getting people like gathered around. And they weren't really fighting. They were having deep discussions about you doing this and you doing that. And, you know, where's the future? And it was one of those that dialogue probably wouldn't have happened any other time, nor would it have had the breadth of people around it that actually realized that this was a fundamental argument or discussion going on right in front of them. And they gathered around, and it kind of looked like a middle school thing where, you know, people are talking to each other, but they weren't saying bad things against each other. They were talking about the technology. And now that was a beautiful moment in JSConf history. The second one would be a toss. I would have gone with Billy Hoffman's presentation about security. It was actually something I wanted to do last year because I come from a dark background of hacking into websites and breaking people's code, have been paid for more than once to do that. And, you know, I really feel a pirate background, as they say. I really feel that it's necessary that more people know how to hack into their own website and other people's. I think it's pretty bad that we don't teach that in college. We should teach not only how to build good code, but how to break bad code. In order to recognize the difference between the two. I've done a presentation up in New York City about how to hack pretty much any website in the world without any problem. And the fact that I can even give that presentation and have it, you know, give it 6 months later and it still not be fixed, that's a fundamental flaw in the way we as developers do business. And I think we need to better train ourselves in order to prevent against that and do a better job. I know last episode you guys talked about hackers, the hackers.org site and the XSS for all NL sites. And there's all sorts of fun things like XSSED.com, which if you haven't been to that site, you definitely should go there. It's got all the OpenXSS violations sorted by PageRank. So if you were looking for a target, that's a beautiful place to start. And they give you code to see the injection. It's pretty beautiful. But the fact that, you know, we as developers, I guess that was my time. The fact that we as developers we don't get a training class in how to break our own stuff, I think that's something we need. And that was one of the great honors I had of seeing Billy's submission. His bio, if you look on the website, I think it's up there. I don't know if I censored it or not. He may or may not have been accused of possibly numerous DMC violations, but never actually formally charged. And I was like, you know, that's pretty ballsy. I like it. So that was my two best points of the weekend. Ray, what about yours?
Yeah, for me, unfortunately, I was sick, and so I didn't get a lot of opportunities to actually look at the sessions. To me, the biggest highlights were actually sitting down with Alex Russell and having a very deep conversation with him about Google Frame. Some of the concerns that people have about Google Frame and whether it's Google's attempt to be a little bit subversive or whether it's a legitimate opportunity to get past some of the limitations that IE6 has. And it was great. I just sitting there and seeing Alex, Alex really entrenched in his thought process and trying to explain the rationale behind it. It's funny because part of it kind of made sense. The other part was really being able to spend time with the six developers, or I'm actually going to say seven, because there was two Facebook people that I was able to interview, but spend time with these really top level JavaScript developers and interview them and be able to create videos that I could then share with the rest of the JavaScript community. That to me was really, really important. And I posted the videos, and so far it looks like they've been received really well. And I think getting that information out very quickly and giving an opportunity for these developers like John David Dalton or Tom Okino or Makinde Adiagbo, just getting them FaceTime with the JavaScript community and allowing them to be introduced out there was important to me. So those were the highlights for me. And on top of that, of course, just being able to talk to people who I speak with online every day and actually putting a face to a name.
I think it's Makinde, right?
Makinde?
Makinde, yeah.
Oh, I mispronounced his name. I'm sure I pronounced it correctly that day, and then I probably just forgot it now. That's what happens when you get to past 40 years old.
You're past 40? You don't look a day past 19.
I am 40.
He got carded everywhere when it was really embarrassing.
I am 42. So, Makinde, I am very sorry for mispronouncing your name, even though as much as I tried to pronounce it correctly on that day, I mispronounced it now. My apologies.
So you were talking earlier about the security talk, and you talked kind of generally about it. Were there any kind of specific hack kind of things or vulnerabilities that they showed off that kind of scared you? For instance, I was looking recently at JSON hijacking, where you're redefining a setter, the object setter, and then able to read JSON values. I mean, are there any things that just, like you were saying, you gave a presentation where you're able to hack any website. Are there specific things that you would point out for people to look into? Beyond, we need to fix browsers. I mean, are there common vulnerabilities that developers need to know about?
Oh, I wasn't even worried about fixing browsers. I think there are a lot of cool things that Billy talked about, and I'll let his presentation speak for itself when it comes out. It'll probably be the first one that I try to push out, because I really fundamentally believe that it is the most important presentation for the community at large to witness. He did stuff like white space sensitivity handling. So if you put padding in different areas, it could yield a completely different render or completely different execution path, which is really fundamentally kick-ass when you think about it. And by using different, spacing and different enters, it changes the fundamental thing. And how do you prevent against using white space? It's very tough. He also presented timing attacks and what a timing attack is. And, if I am running malicious code in the browser, if I'm able to get some code element running because you visit my website, I can go back and check to see what other things are loaded in cache, because I can tell the difference between the time it would take to load it from cache versus the time it would take to load it from externally. And by doing that, I can start building patterns and I can start executing attacks against the various sites that you visit, and start building a backwards matrix from it. He may or may not have shown an image that was a little bit racy in that one, but it was really killer. The getter and setter one is a beautiful one, and that will probably never be fully fixed. It's just a fundamental craziness of having to run somebody else's code anywhere else. And Kaha and AdSpace are trying, but I don't know if that's the right thing. I think actually education of developers to not just accept what they think to be always gospel truth to being gospel truth. I think at some point we need to recognize that we live in a dirty, dirty world. And if somebody wants to try to get in, they're going to find a way. They're going to be smarter than you until you train up on those things and become smarter than them. I could probably throw out a variety of names. I would guess, John, that even the attack vectors that you had mentioned, redefining getters and setters, most developers don't even know what that means. And the quick and dirty of it is, in JavaScript, you can redefine any function, and everything in JavaScript can be defined via a function. So an array and the initialization of an array can be redefined, and whatever code runs last wins, and it clobbers the previous function. So if I redefine an array and the initializer for an array to be something that writes the array back to a server, and then also opens the array up so you would never, ever know it, and it's transparent. And then I query back for your Gmail contacts. The Gmail service would send me a JSON object that would be rendered into the JavaScript's global space. Once it's rendered in the global space, it uses the array initializer. And then that would execute my code instead of what Google expects its own code to be. So therefore, I get access to all your contacts without actually having to do any really hard work, because Google's going to let me log in and from any browser or from any remote point, allow me to do any JSONP call back to it. So there's all these beautiful things that that was actually a hack that has been fixed in the past 4 months. I guess it's 6 months at this point. 6 months ago, that was a valid and open attack vector. But it's kind of scary that we move or we live in a world and most people don't even know that that happens and or don't even know how to pull that off. I mean, I would guess that we need to, or I would state that we need to train developers to be able to do that in order to be able to prevent against that. Let me ask just on the call, who on the call knew that you could actually do something like that?
I did.
Okay, that's one out of five? Six?
Well, I asked. Yeah, six. So I.
Oh. K-Scott probably did too.
Okay.
He may be asleep.
This is a weird group, though. I think in general, I agree. I think you could ask a huge majority of developers and they would never have heard about this.
Oh, yeah. See, I mean, yeah, every time that I show someone that you can overwrite, you know, string in JavaScript, the string object, and make it do whatever, people freak out. Like, oh, my gosh. And I try to tell them, if you're writing unit tests, you don't really need a mocking framework because you can just, you know, double whatever you want.
Right.
Just overwrite it. And
I have this really cool mocking framework. It's called JavaScript. You should try it. It's beautiful.
But those are the two things, even though I wasn't at JSConf, those are the two things that kind of resonated with me from the Twitter exclamations. The first was the Crockford keynote where he said, you know, yeah, HTML5 is great and all, but what about security? And then the second one was the collective jaw drop when the security presentation was given, and I saw the reactions coming across. People were like, oh my God, I'm shutting my browser now, and you know, and everything, right. everything like that. And I agreed that, yeah, my own personal opinion is that we've got lots of vendors pushing HTML5 and things forward for, you know, their own kind of app specific reasons. But we're not really approaching some of the security vulnerabilities and not really addressing security as much as I think we should be. I haven't looked at the latest ES5. I think it's called ES5 spec, isn't it?
Harmony.
Is it still
yeah.
called Harmony?
Yep.
Yeah, for a while they were calling it something else, and then they switched to Harmony. And I read up on the spec that they got rid of, that had all the awful annotated type notation and all that junk.
Yeah, that was ES4. Crockford's talk was, he seemed to focus very much on how XSS is the biggest thing that's plaguing JavaScript right now, or ECMAScript. And I wanted to tell him it's not ECMAConf. I don't agree with that statement. And Brendan Eich as well, he came out and said that's not the biggest thing plaguing JavaScript. You know, we're driving at a breakneck speed with HTML5, with Canvas, with all these technologies that we're shoving down people's throats, for lack of a better term. And eventually, yes, hackers will figure out ways through. I think the better thing, as I keep reiterating, is educating people that there are ways of breaking everything. And there is, you know, enough time and enough effort, everything can be broken. And that's just the basic truth of any time you have some sort of data going across and you need to trust one of the two both endpoints. You can't do it. It's a fundamental flaw in the human system. It's going to break down. So, you know, should we stop everything? I don't think that's the right solution. I think we should work on educating people. I think the same amount of effort we put into HTML5 education, or Python education, or learning JavaScript or jQuery education, we should put into how to hack a website and how to protect against hacking from having your website hacked. And that's not just HTML encoding output elements. There's a lot more to it than that.
Is K-Scott still around?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
I'm awake.
Sorry,
Scott. Did that answer your question? I think I got one out of the two, so I get 50% credit, right?
Yeah. It's the two things that I spend all my time educating people about JavaScript on are scope and security. it usually takes them a long time to really get scope. And then, you know, you spend the rest of the time. Most of the time, I'm not even teaching them about XSS or things like that, or even HTML injection. I'm just saying, you know, don't send stuff down to the browser that's sensitive.
Right. So you're not even dealing with the large reaching problem. You're still dealing with the.
I'm saying don't send credit cards case. In the clear. don't send down addresses. You know, stuff like that.
Right. You're dealing with the this and the F, as I put it. This, which goes to the scope, and the F, because that's what you say when you look at the people who are doing this.
Exactly.
That was a good one. Take two of those.
So what about the evolution of the language itself, JavaScript? It seems like most of the airtime goes to HTML5, DOM enhancements, and sort of normalizing the DOM and all that stuff. But I don't hear as much talk as I used to about that, actually evolving the language itself. What's going on in that area?
I mean, there's the HTML5 spec that was recently ratified. I believe, Ray, correct me if I'm wrong on this, that was ratified at Ajax Experience last year, right?
You know, honestly, I can't remember.
I feel like it was, because I feel like they took a victory lap on it. And
I think it was. I think it was.
Really
was
happy it? About it, but it's there.
You mean ECMAScript, though? Is that what you're talking about?
Sorry, ECMAScript.
JScript, okay, yeah. Right, John?
JScript. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, no.
Maybe script for the win. Harmony, ECMAScript 5, whatever you want to call it. It was sort of ratified at Ajax Experience last year. And the fact that you haven't heard more about it is probably because, I mean, as a language, I think a lot of people are still trying to figure out. I think you have an interesting paradigm here where more people know how to use a library that sits on top of it than you do the actual language itself. It's sort of like as if it was Rails versus Ruby. Sorry, that was said underneath my breath, not intentionally. But there's this odd conundrum where you can hand, no offense to hardcore nerd jQuery people who sit in jQuery OT, rock on! You could hand Peter. Most jQuery developers, Peter, yes, Peter Higgins, most jQuery developers JavaScript code and say, what's this do? And they wouldn't know what to do with it. And I feel like entrenching in a language or in a library, same with Prototype, same with Dojo. And once those libraries become entrenched, the language becomes negligible. So then you start looking at the library movement and the velocity that they move at, and the acceleration is incredibly positive. I mean, the stuff that jQuery pushes out release after release from up to 1.4 right now, right? Is that right, Ray? 1.4?
1.42, yeah.
1.42 is pretty balls out awesome. Without question, balls out awesome. And then
can I use that for like a slide? Balls out awesome.
Balls out awesome, but you do have to put balls, and they do have to be out. You can use whatever analogy you want for that.
Okay.
Deal. And then, you know, Dojo's trucking along. They're heading up for, gearing up for, or just made a major release. And, you know, these libraries are doing a great job. And you have the server side coming along. Does the language need to change, or do we just need to figure out how to actually use it in a non-toy fashion? I always find it hilarious that it's applied the toy moniker, even though it's the most widely used language in the world. And either that was the right answer and everyone went quiet, or everyone was like, that guy's an idiot.
We can't follow that up. It's just so brilliant. How do you talk after balls out awesome?
Well, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, I'm done on that one.
So we are kind of getting towards it. Normally we go around an hour, and with editing, cutting out dead air and all that, we're probably at around that. So are there things you guys want to talk about that we want to get, you know, want to mention? We'll do a thing at the very end where we let you kind of pimp stuff, like the conference or any other stuff you want to. But I mean, are there other things about JSConf or, you know, JavaScript community, whatever, that you want to talk about? Or you can pimp stuff. I don't know. Was there any
beer? Your mom. Yes, your mom, definitely. You know, Matt, you could actually talk. I think this is called the general talk session.
Yeah, the thing is, Matt's on like a dial-up connection, so he keeps breaking up, and so let's not have him talk.
He's tethered.
I'm tethered at this point, so chances are the audio isn't all that great.
And then your voice comes into it, which is, it just adds to the horror.
There was one question I saw that you jumped out there and asked for a whole bunch of questions.
Yeah.
What about the what other events are they excited about? That might be a good one.
That's a good
I'd be intrigued to see what the other two guys they're looking forward to. And then that way I can also, as Matt alluded to, plug JSConf EU, and that would be great because, they'd love me. But
Who was that question from? I'm trying to...
Sarah J. Chips.
Ah, yes. Our good friend Sarah.
Who actually put in to speak at JSConf, which is kind of cool. We actually... Well, that maybe that's something we can chat about. One of the things that we did with this year is we really tried to make a concerted effort to increase the gender diversity and just general diversity at JSConf. One of the things that we did with that, and we do with all of the JSConf US, is we give back to charity, and it keeps us honest. It really keeps us honest because, one, we're trying to balance the budget, and not only that, we have to make sure we give some money back to charity. We try to, not carry anything over, and it's really a hairy situation all the way down to the end. This year, what we did is we set up a diversity in the computing sciences program, diversity drive that, the general public can help contribute to. We're going to take whatever residual funds are left over from JSConf and donate it to the charity drive or to the diversity drive. And what it is there are a lot of university outreach programs that go out to either local or regional youths of various gender and ethnic backgrounds and try to bring them into the computing sciences by giving them early access to, programming and what are data structures and really awesome stuff, and sit down there and work with them. And, for me, the way I learned computing was my father sat down with me and he taught me, here's how you do this. And my handle, Voodoo, was my dad's first computer that I got into without him knowing. So that's fundamental to the way I learn. And during the time we did JSConf, my wife was pregnant and we found out it was a girl. So it was all dovetailed with that. And trying to, as a father of a daughter right now, I would love to have, or soon to be father of a daughter in the next 2 months, I would love to have outreach programs that she could take advantage of to try to learn and learn to love computing sciences like I do. And I personally think it's fundamentally the thing we as a group, as a community, have to do to try to bring, the balance of diversity to the computing sciences. And I think that's probably the most important thing we do. We lose a lot without the gender balance and the ethnicity balance of the community, in terms of creativity that's lost, in terms of different ideas, different, backgrounds being brought together and coming up with different solutions. And I for one think it's the most important thing we can do. So if you have some change to spare, I know we're not in great times, but if you want to help out with the diversity drive, check on the JSConf website and it's there. We will probably be locking it out in the next, by the middle of next month, and then from whatever funds are there, doing the donations to the various organizations. You can find out more from it on the blog, but it's something that we deeply believe in, and obviously the JSConf community believes in it because we've already raised a pretty fair amount of money, I believe, and like to keep it going. So,
before you go, is there anything you want to tell us about? Anything exciting going on coming up soon?
Well, we're having the jQuery conference this weekend, and that's going to be an awesome event. I don't think we're going to have the level of craziness that is JSConf, but I know we're going to have some great sessions, so that's going to be pretty exciting. And that's pretty much it. Apart from just pimping out jQuery and jQuery UI, I mean, that's obviously jQuery UI 1.8 was just released, and it's really going to be a great year for jQuery UI. We're going to put a lot of effort into promoting it further and helping it gain some more traction. So definitely check out jQuery.com and jQueryUI.com.
The only thing I would say is do your best to go find a beer hall and don't order anything from the major brewers. Go do yourself a favor and find a local brewery and enjoy their beer. And if they don't have good beer, find another one. That's all.
You're in Reston, Chris?
Yeah, rest in Virginia for 46 hours. And then we're closing on our house Friday morning. So it's actually less than that. It's like 26 hours. Yeah, we're moving just across the street over to Herndon. But yeah.
Well, for DC folks, what's the place to try?
I could actually give you pretty much every major city. DC folks, I would say if you're looking to spend, if you have a couple dollars to spend and you want to get some very high quality, low access beer, Church Key is probably the best place to go. It's in DC. If you're out in the suburbs, I would suggest Dogfish Head over in Chantilly, Carpool over in Herndon. Dogfish Head carries Dogfish Head Ale, and Carpool carries a wide variety. Rustico is another beautiful place, and Bricks Killer down in D.C. That's probably the most beautiful draft and beer selection you can possibly find in D.C.
Awesome. I'm going to write all those down.
Just walk around.
Yeah.
Just call me up. We'll go out and have some good ones.
Cool. I'll do that. Any last words, Matt?
Last words. Well, I guess I'll see you all next week to talk about the reactive extensions for JavaScript. Other than that, try to get the Novalang restarted. Chris, hint, hint, on more JavaScript love. And other than that, just staying active in the DC area and seeing what interesting things that Chris and I can pull off in this area.
And Atlanta.
Absolutely.
Because Matt and I did NoSQL East, which was down in Atlanta, which brought together like Kevin Weil from Twitter and a variety of different individuals from all over the country to chat about NoSQL solutions. I don't know if we're planning on doing it again this year, but if we are, you should check it out. It's a great little conference. Also, if you wanted to go to JSConf or like the discussions excited you, or you want to get access to some of the individuals that we chatted about, Douglas Crockford and Tom Hughes Croucher, who I do have his pants and not his wallet anymore, wink, wink. My best recommendation if you're in Europe is SWDC, and if you want to go soon is SWDC. If you can wait until September, I would recommend JSConf EU. The JSConf EU I recommend above everything, even US, because it's in Europe and it's right in Oktoberfest. And if you're in the US and you want to go to one that's closer, TXJS is a very, very good, well put together conference. I strongly, strongly recommend it.
That sounds good. Thank you guys for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Tune in again. We look forward to talking to Matt next week about the reactive extension. The end.